Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Listening to today's guest, you will immediately get a sense that he has been an athlete his whole life. From martial arts to ice hockey, Matt Giordano is a force of nature. However, he experienced many challenging bumps along the road and eventually his injured body decided, do you know what, I'm going to dedicate to yoga. And as a result, through a lot of hard work, he's now become an international superstar where he shares his groundbreaking ways to help people advance their yoga practice. Let's listen to Matt Giordano. Hey everybody, welcome to Love at First Science and welcome Matt Giordano. It's so good to have you on the show, Matt.
Thank you. So excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
I mean, this podcast is, I think most of the people that are listening are my yoga teacher friends out there who are trying to level up and just understand the body in a better way. But I have called it Love at First Science because I do want to sort of just bring a slightly deeper understanding of the human body to this demographic. And you were the perfect person to bring on the show because you've got such an insane ability to A, explain things that are super complicated, B, get people into things that they never dreamed possible. And you've got this kind of like physics alignment background, which honestly, I have so much respect for you and what you do. So yeah, thank you for being here and sharing all your knowledge.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Very sweet. Yeah. I have a love for the body and, you know, actually it's a good starting point. I didn't start this practice with the desire to understand the human body, but that became the byproduct. So I started really for the benefits of the mind. That was why I wanted to do yoga. I wanted to have peace of mind and find a little bit better mental health, but I wound up being really, in addition to that, really fascinated with the human body. And, you know, I think that started with the fact that when I came to yoga, my shoulder hurt in downward facing dog and my right knee hurt in pigeon pose. And that began, well, I really like this practice, but how can I do it where I'm not in pain? So that was like the jumping off point for me. It just sort of led me down this path of trying to understand biomechanics, anatomy, and how I can feel better in my yoga practice.
And guys, just a quick side note, Matt isn't new to moving his body. I mean, we were just talking off camera about how you have this whole other life with insane skills, one of which is ice hockey. So you definitely were no stranger to the movement world. What do you think it was about yoga that kind of made it a little bit more interesting in your body where you did have these, I would say, warning flags kind of popping up?
I think it was the key component was the idea that yoga was about awareness, or at least that's how my teachers presented it to me in the beginning. And that's how I still present it now. And for me, you know, growing up playing ice hockey, the purpose or the intent of ice hockey was to score the goal or to not let the opponents score the goal. So the intent behind why I was moving my body was not the same in ice hockey as it was with yoga. My teachers, when I came into yoga, well, first of all, it was my stepmom. Her name is Patty Mataska, and she was, I want to say, probably in her 50s at the time that I started practicing. And the demographic of people that I was practicing with were in their 50s and 60s. And so their main concern was not about getting into poses, but rather about feeling good in their human body. And so a lot of the discussion in classes was around this idea of health and well-being in the physical body. So I didn't come into it from that postural standpoint that I know a lot of people are coming into it today with. And I know also, you know, creates a lot of intimidation for people why they don't do yoga today is because of that, but nothing wrong with that perspective or that approach. Just simply that was not how I was brought into it. It was about feeling good in the body. So that presentation of becoming aware of the body and understanding why someone wouldn't feel good in a certain posture or throughout poses was how it was presented to me. So that intent led me to self-inquiry, physically speaking, and asking myself, well, why doesn't my knee feel good in pigeon pose? Why doesn't my shoulder feel good in downward facing dog? And what can I do about it? And that was, a whole different, mindset than I've ever been in my life at that, in my early 20s there. I never even asked about my physical body. It was just like, either I'm hurt and I got to go to the hospital, or, you know, or I don't think about it. You know, it's like, you don't think about your body. It's just, it's there. It should be doing its thing. You know, it's kind of, I expected it to do things for me. And I'm sure a lot of people growing up have that same perspective, I imagine. At least it was either I'm injured and, you know, got a broken bone and it's got to heal for a while. And when it's done, and, you know, for example, I broke my shoulder when I was 17 in multiple places. I broke my collarbone in 3 different places. I didn't actually shatter my shoulder blade, but I fractured it in multiple spots. So,
that's intense.
Yeah. And
what happened?
Yeah. Well, okay. I was,
did you get hit by a car? Because that sounds like what happened.
Kind of a little more interesting than that. I was being towed on a sled behind a car. So I was on, I was on a sled behind a car with a tow rope. And then that car got a little too close to a fence pole and I went into the fence pole and shattered the whole thing. So
at least the intention was to have fun. So it wasn't like some freak accident.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It was more our mistake, my own fault, our fault on why that happened. Anyway, it was an interesting adventure because afterwards I was told to do physical therapy, told to do rehabilitation, but at 17 years old, my feeling was just that my body, whatever, it's going to be fine. You know, it's going to heal itself. And I just went, like, as a true 17-year-old boy, like, went to the gym, you know, 6 weeks later, trying to lift weights and in pain. And, you know, for the next few years, just, you know, realizing like my body's not necessarily going to heal. And I never actually went to physical therapy for the shoulder. So I had all sorts of, you know, wacky pain with yoga when I came in, and just, you know, it was just testing that shoulder constantly, breaking, it was tons of scar tissue involved in there, and having to break through that without any guidance, really. You know, I wish I did gone to physical therapy, rehabbed it properly, had somebody's guidance to tell me, you know, this is scar tissue, you're going to have to break it up this way. This is the way the shoulder rotates this way and that way and engage these muscles. That would have been great. I didn't do that. You know, I took my body for granted. And so when I came to yoga, got into yoga class and was being instructed to move my shoulder back or lift it up or do this, pull it down, you know, all the different verbal cues triggered me to feel like I was, you know, the movie Avatar, in the first one where, he gets into like this new body and is like kind of understanding the mechanics of it. That for me was yeah. Like, wait, what? I can move my shoulder control this way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember being so fascinated by it that I would, after class, spend the rest of the class, the rest of the day, like looking in the mirror, moving my shoulder this way, that way. And everything I did,
wow,
like, from, yeah, what is
what this thing can do?
I can't believe it. I remember opening a door and I reached out for the door. And when I pulled it, I like retracted, I pulled my shoulder blade towards the spine. And I was like, I retracted and I was like, whoa, that's how the shoulder works, you know? And I was so blown away. Yeah. So I had this little geekiness from the get-go, just, you know, not intentfully. That just sort of, I think, the way that I was taught yoga brought me into that curiosity.
And so, listen, I don't just want to talk about hypermobility. Like, gosh, I hope we end up having time to talk about everything I have on my list. But at one point, did you discover that you had hypermobility?
Sure. Well, I don't know if I would call it that when I was younger, or I don't know if I called it that when I was younger, but I've had it since I was really young. So for example, not anymore, but my thumbs would bend backwards so that I could touch the back of my wrist when I was little. And I injured them so many times because of that hypermobility. So basically what happened, I remember the first time I injured it, I was just pushing the old school, I don't know if anybody remembers it, but from cars in the 80s, when you would open the doorknob, it wasn't like
you had that button that you had
button
to push.
Yes,
that had
exactly
the key part. Oh my god, yes. We're both so old.
So when you push that button in, it unlocked the door. But like, you know, in the 80s, like, the button wasn't easy to push. It was like something you had to, like,
it would get,
you
know, rusty, really, wouldn't it?
So the first time I was opening my dad's truck and I pushed it and I bent it back forcefully with too much, and like I you know, I was probably, I'm guessing 7 or 8 years old, and the pain was excruciating. Anyway, the hypermobility did come back. I was able to be double jointed, or whatever, you know, you call it, and depending on what country you live in. I was able to get that back. But then the next time, I was playing dodgeball. Do you guys have that in the UK?
No, not so much, but everyone's seen the film, so they know what you're talking about.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's a stupid game where you throw a ball at each other and little kids play it and get hurt. So I got hurt because I was trying to catch the dodgeball and it bent my thumb backwards. I think that was the other hand. And then I started doing gymnastics in fourth and fifth grade. I did back handspring, same thing, landed my knee on my thumb and it bent backwards. And it was so painful. I think
your
it was like
thumbs. I mean, yeah, thumb war with you. I'm going to so take you down if we ever meet and do a thumb wars.
Well, I hurt them so many times that they're no longer double jointed, which probably a good thing. But I, you know, like they basically were stiff. But the back handspring situation was the last time I did gymnastics, unfortunately, because I got so I was in, you know, fifth grade, and I didn't want to tell anyone I was hurt. I was ashamed of it. I kind of was doing things on my own without the support of spotters, and you know, I shouldn't have been. Then I hurt myself, and then I just decided to like kind of leave gymnastics, which was sad because I probably would have really loved doing that for a longer period of time. But anyway, also the other thing that was really obvious about hypermobility for me when I was at a young age. So I did Taekwondo growing up as a kid. A form of martial arts. And I don't know if anybody remembers the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies where he would do like splits between trucks or anything.
While they were moving.
Exactly. So I used to want to be like Jean-Claude Van Damme. So I would do splits between chairs where my legs were up, you know, higher than my body. And I, so I had a lot of inner thigh hypermobility, and I would get these weird cramps in my outer hips, and I could say it wasn't like painful, but strange growing up. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I played a lot of hockey, as you mentioned, and that sort of tightened up my hips as I got older. And I got actually very, very stiff. Yet, I guess the thing, I mean, it's a good starting point with hypermobility. You could have really hypermobile joints, which means like, you know, your ligaments themselves, which are different tissue than say muscle, where ligaments kind of hold the bones in place. Your ligaments can be very lax, and that would, you know, qualify as hypermobility. And that could allow for excess movement in the joint. I don't know how, you know, I'm trying to keep things simple so we can understand, but basically ligaments hold joints in place, and then muscles but kind of feed into tendons, which create movement or can also stop movement. So if the muscles get tight, that can help the ligaments out. You know, if the ligaments are lax, loose, then muscle eventually, if you tighten it up enough, can take over for the joints, for the ligaments. So that's kind of what happened for me, thankfully, as I grew older in my teenage years, is I got so tight from muscle engagement that that hypermobility seemingly went away. And now there are always problems on any end of the spectrum. So what happened as a result of getting so tight in my hips was that my low back had a lot of discomfort, a lot of pain. And as I mentioned, my right knee, when it came to yoga, when I started stretching my hips, right knee was agonizing. But another last thing about hypermobility growing up, my knees were, I never got diagnosed with anything, but I always have excruciating pain in my knees with martial arts. Now, you know, you could say, well, you're just kicking a punching bag or whatever and things like that. But I would wear, after martial arts, after I'd get home, I would have a little walking chair because my knees would hurt so bad.
So extreme.
Now, I don't have necessarily, when you look at my knees, you're not going to say, oh, those are hyperextensive knees. Like they bend backwards, but it was clear that the joints themselves are not quite maybe supportive, you know, I don't have any sort of x-rays that have shown, but I assume the ligaments there are a little bit looser, and, the my doctor's advice as a young boy was just, you know, strengthen your quads, which fair enough. That's one of the things that you need to do. You know, if your knees are a little bit wackadoodle, and that was the only thing that, you know, they could come up with, well, just strengthen your quads. Okay. So I strengthened my quads, but there's also the hamstrings, the adductors, you know, all of that would be beneficial for me at that time. But I was a little boy and it wasn't my interest. I just wanted to do martial arts, but a lot of pain in my knees, wore knee braces all the time, which is, you know, is trying to make it, the knee brace is trying to do the job of the ligaments that are in the knee. And there's lots of signs to answer your question real short. There's lots of signs as a kid that I had a lot of hypermobility in my body. And growing up though, as a teenage boy doing a lot of sports, I lost a lot of that in a good way, but then created other problems. And, you know, we can talk about that as well, you know, at some other part in this conversation if we get there, but yeah, that's the,
well, I guess like
long and short of it.
I guess one of the important messages I'm always trying to like feed to people listening is that very often we view pain through this lens of the tissues, but obviously the nervous system is so complex and there's so many different things that are coming into it, particularly as you mentioned, excuse me, that often hypermobility will have lax ligaments, but there's also sort of a tightness to their body. Like they'll maybe have, you know, this protective output that the brain will choose, and they'll not even be aware they're hypermobile because they've got the stiff quality to their tissues. And in their mind, because they've heard of words like double jointed, they'll obviously assume, oh, that could never be me. But actually, they're actually have got quite severe hypermobility, and it's because they're certain important tissues, such as those around their joints, as you mentioned, the ligaments, or even in their gut, or even in their blood vessels, don't have that recoil, which is needed for the system to operate.
Yeah, beautiful. So, you know, I think the discussion around hypermobility or anything or any kind of, let's say this, when we talk about, especially in the yoga world, there's always the discussion about, you know, limitations. And I think this is it's a great discussion, but it's also something, sometimes when we discuss limitations become the limitations. And actually I've heard you talk about this a little bit, you know, talking about, from the pain perspective, you can kind of program yourself to assume that there's going to be more pain. And then suddenly
it's multifactorial. Yeah. There's right, so right. many influences. Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of many.
Right. So I think one thing that I do want to make sure I get across from, in this conversation is that if we are going to have the discussion around hypermobility, it only holds value if we discuss it from the perspective of it being something that empowers us to take action and to improve our well-being. So if we look at it from just the standpoint like, oh, well, I'm hypermobile, that's it, then I think it does us a disservice and we should just cut the conversation completely. You know what I mean? So
totally agree.
I think for us to look at it, you know, it comes up a lot. I want to just kind of weave something else in here. When people have a limitation about doing a yoga posture, for example, I always get questions like, maybe my arms are too short to do the step forward from down dog to, you know, step forward to warrior one or lunge or whatever it is. Are my arms too short? And I say like, you know, if your arms are really short, if that is the case, you know, like, and you got significantly really short arms, like what good does it do to just settle into, well, my arms are short, I can't do it. You know, I think what people are looking for is a way out, you know, a reason why it's really challenging for me, which I know we all, when we struggle, we want to think that we are the anomaly, that there's something specifically that's causing the struggle other than the fact that we need to put a lot more effort and repetition into something. So if we use the, you know, hypermobility as an excuse, or we use my short arms as an excuse or whatever, then it actually holds us back from our potential. So like in the example, so if you have short arms, you know, if that is the case, which usually it's not the case, it tends to be the fact that you just simply are not protracting your scapula, which makes your arms seemingly significantly longer by several inches, and then flexing the spine, which then will increase your wingspan, reach basically even further, and being able to flex at the hip. So these are all things that you would need in order to do a step forward. Basically, protraction of the shoulders, which means you separate your shoulders away from the spine and around the body. So if you're in plank pose, push the ground away like crazy, round your upper back, and then hip flexion, pull your knees tight into your chest. Now that will maximize the space between your foot and the ground. So this to me, when you look at it this way, and I just kind of got into some technical terms that maybe we don't have a visual for, but there's plenty of tutorials on how to step forward and what those things mean. Just if you're looking for the solution for yourself and ways in which you can apply action to step into your potential, then I think the discussion around hypermobility or anomalies in the bone structure are great. But if you're looking for excuses as to why you should maybe just not do any effort, then I think it's a problem. You know, for example, if I just answer, yes, your arms are short, you should probably just skip this. You know, then that person has a way out that is just, oh, cool, we don't have to do this. And the problem with that is that they never actually tap into their potential. You know, if my perspective is if you maximize your protraction in this example specifically, you strengthen your serratus anterior muscles, your pectoralis major, if you maximize flexion of the spine, your core gets stronger. And if you maximize hip flexion, your hip flexors get stronger and so on, and then you still can't step forward, but the benefits are that you have stronger hip flexors, stronger serratus anterior, stronger pectoralis muscles. Well, then who cares at that point, right? You've learned and grown so much into your potential human functionality that stepping forward doesn't matter. But you wouldn't get all that if you didn't try.
Matt, one of the issues I think that I'm observing a lot, and I think it's changing now, is that you'll be in a yoga class and people will almost praise someone for going passively to their end range repeatedly without any integration or any awareness of their body. And then there'll be in a pose and then they'll cue them, you can go more, go deeper. Mm. And they will. And then they will still come and adjust the person to go deeper. So I think that maybe let's get into a little bit of practical steps. Like, as a teacher who's highly skilled, understands anatomy and biomechanics at a very high level, how would you adjust what you do? How would you take a moment to observe what you can see? And what are those distinctions that people can then start looking out for?
Okay, brilliant. And thank you for segueing into this, but it's the same conversation. But what's clarifying here is the difference between effort in stretching and effort in strengthening. So the example that I just gave, putting more and more effort into stepping forward, requires that you strengthen your physical body through active range of motion versus, you know, let's say if you were getting into, say, Hanumanasana, splits pose, if you put more and more effort into getting into splits pose, the effort that you're putting into is to stretch the muscles more passively, meaning your gravity's already putting you into that stretch, right? Gravity, the weight of gravity is upon you. And basically any effort you put in is just stretching your in this case, your hip flexors and your hamstrings further and further and further. So, and then if a yoga teacher came by, the adjustment for splits pose probably would be to try to get you, closer to the ground. Where if it were me and let's say you were doing splits pose and I were going to choose an adjustment, I would lightly, and I'm not saying to do this, please, if you're a yoga teacher out there, don't try anything that I suggest unless you've been taught specifically by someone on how to do these things. But I would place my hands on your shoulders and say, try to push yourself up into my hands. So that would be try to get yourself out of this pose. So the effort I would place is in keeping the body tightly knit, stronger together. And that's largely because of the demographic and who I'm teaching. Meaning if we're practicing a flexibility oriented practice, which asana is, right? We're stretching the body constantly. And then I think it's very important to be recoiling the body, to be pulling it back together constantly, right?
PNF, isn't it?
Yes.
And it works well with stiff and mobile people.
Yes, for sure. It actually works on both ends of the spectrum, as you said. So the areas of my body that I tend to be stiff on, I really do a lot of PNF. I call it facilitated stretching, engaging the muscles. That's not my term, by the way. That's another term, but that's PNF is a technique.
It's yours now, Matt.
Yeah.
It's all yours.
So PNF is a technique that is based on facilitated stretching, right? There's a specific way in which you go about engaging and releasing. That's the PNF technique. And facilitated stretching just simply means engaging muscles that are lengthened. So there's no necessary technique involved in facilitated stretch, whereas PNF or I think there's pendiculation. There's a bunch of different techniques based on facilitated stretching. Sorry, just put that out there just to make sure we have a clarity of conversation. So my approach, if I was tight in some area in my body or someone else's, I would suggest using a facilitated stretch or PNF kind of technique in order to release tension. And that's through the Golgi tendon organ. If you want to look up facilitated stretching, it's a really good idea. That way you understand basically what happens when the stretch receptors are sending signals to the brain saying, hey, there's a lot of tension on this muscle, release it. We should just clarify that when you stretch a muscle, that puts tension on a muscle. When you engage a muscle, that also puts tension on a muscle. When you stretch a muscle that is lengthened, when you engage a muscle that is lengthened, that is a lot of tension. And so the Golgi tendon organ is saying, wow, there's a lot of tension on this muscle. And it sends signals up to the brain. The brain says, oh, well, release it. And it sends signals back down. And then it says, okay, relax. And then the muscle lengthens. And that's the storybook version of what happens. And if you use that as a way of releasing tension in the body, you can improve your flexibility while improving functionality. So you gain two things. You gain your flexibility, but you also gain the ability to activate a muscle. And we got to be very clear. There's basically two things that you can do with a muscle: activate or not activate. And you can do that within percentages, right? So you can activate more like 10% activation versus 100% activation. That's a different type of activation. So you can activate or not activate. You can't stretch a muscle, right? So I can't, my hamstring, I can't tell my hamstring to stretch. I can tell my quadricep to engage, which would then create a stretch for the hamstring, but I can't stretch the hamstring. That's a clarifying thing for muscles that I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize. Gravity can stretch you. Or an opposing position. Muscle group, yeah. Yes, right? Or a choice of an alignment.
But you can't signal your brain to tell your muscle without changing something. That's such a brilliant distinction. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that one of the things you also will probably get into as you keep going is just like, in addition to this kind of active range of motion that is so useful for people to build those additional maps in the brain of, you know, where it's safe to go, we can also kind of adjust how we verbalize things to this demographic, right? Like certain things that could be said in a certain way that could actually serve, again, both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, maybe a couple of rules of thumb that always can be broken, but just some ideas for your practice and as a teacher is if gravity is assisting you in stretching, then I would suggest trying to oppose gravity, meaning if gravity is increasing the stretch, engage your muscles to get to move the opposite direction. So for the example of Hanumanasana, the gravity is upon you and it's actually in the weight of your body, of course, right? And then of course you doing the pose and God forbid a yoga teacher pushing you down, right? All of that weight is... Yes. All of that weight is stretching you. It's increasing your flexibility. But as a result, what happens, and I always give this example, I think this is really great. What happens when you have something emotionally or something weighing heavy on you that you don't want to share with people, but someone says like, hey, open up to me, you know, like, and tries to push.
Tell me.
Yeah. Tell me, yeah. Say it, right? Like, when you don't trust that person, you don't want to tell them, you don't want to share it with them. Yeah. But when it's a close friend that you have a trust with, and they are giving you the space and saying, like, you know, when the time is right, well, you can share it, you know, like that, you're more likely to share it with the person that doesn't push it out of you. The person that just holds space for you and is like, you know, I'm there for you no matter what. And I love you no matter what. So if it's something that you want to share, you know, share it with me. You're more likely to come forward and say whatever it is you need to say. But if it's like, you know, and if you've ever done a teacher training, you know this, because sometimes, like, as yoga teacher trainers, some of our job is to provoke you a little bit into transformation. And sometimes we as teachers make mistakes, and we provoke you maybe a little too much, and you retract, you recoil, you don't want to share. And I'm sure everyone's had this experience where someone's tried to poke them a little bit too much and they shut down. I've made mistakes as a, you know, a teacher, thinking that I've had somebody's trust and thought they were ready to share, but they really weren't. And then, you know, pushed a little bit too much, and then they retract all the way and don't share at all. Right. That's what the body does. That's what the muscular system does. And we as practitioners will make those mistakes. We'll push ourselves a little bit too much. The body recoils, it holds even more tension, and you come out of a pose thinking like you got more flexible. The next time you go in, you're even tighter than the last time, hopefully, because your body is saying, that was dumb. It's don't do safe. That. Don't yeah, push me
it's
into that.
That threat. It's like, yes.
Yeah. It fights back. Just like anything else, if you start an argument, which is what you're doing with your muscles, you're starting an argument by trying to push yourself into flexibility, it's going to fight back. It's going to have its opinion and say, no, I don't want to lengthen. You're crazy. My job is to tighten. My job is to contract
and move me. Yeah.
Right. So you have to develop a trust with the physical body. If you want to improve flexibility, you have to strengthen. You have to show that you have the capacity and the awareness and the ability to keep it safe, then it will release and open if going for flexibility is the purpose, right? So regardless if you're on the tight end of the spectrum or not, you want to contract. Anyway, the rules of thumb, if gravity is upon you and it's pushing you into flexibility, try the opposite. Try to tighten your muscles instead of stretch them. So in the case of Hanumanasana, my suggestion is don't go to your fullest flexibility, back out about 70% to about 70%. So wherever you think, you know, if you're like, okay, touching the ground with your pelvis is your 100%, which in my case would be, I can put the pelvis on the ground. I lift the pelvis up a few inches off the ground, centimeters off the ground. Sorry. And you guys use it.
Whatever. Actually. We get it.
Yeah, whatever. So you lift your hips up off the ground and then start pulling your legs toward each other so that you actually rise up even higher. And that way you improve the functionality of the muscles and the hamstrings and the hip flexors, and you start engaging them. And actually, if you use the PNF perspective, let's say after 10 seconds of squeezing in and then you relax slowly into it, you'll see that you can go even deeper if that was the goal. It wouldn't be my goal. My goal would be to consistently sustain staying lifted up, because I don't think necessarily putting my pelvis on the ground holds any sort of a medal or prize, you know. But let's say that was your desire, then relax into it and you'll see that you will go further. However, you will have done so in a way that your body is ready for it and is deciding to do it instead of you pushing yourself into it. And for me, in my experience, that is a much better approach. Now, the opposite, if gravity is against you and you have to work against gravity to create something, then that is where I suggest placing your full effort. So in the example, this is also a flexibility pose of full wheel, Urdhva Dhanurasana. And, you know, anything I say is my opinion here. So please feel free to refute it. I'm not the guru on the physical body. I'm just suggesting from my experience that in full wheel, gravity is pushing you down to the ground. So I think it's beneficial to use your effort to press your body up towards the sky. And so, you know, and I know you agree on this perspective, Celeste. So like a lot of people have said, like, relax your glutes in in full wheel. And there are certain reasons why that might be valuable. However, if the objective was to get your hips off the ground, then relaxing your glutes is the most ridiculous statement ever, because what gets your pelvis off the ground is your glutes. You know, it's your glutes, your hamstrings, your adductor magnus, your back, all coordinating as a unit to lift the whole body up off the ground. Now, that's a flexibility oriented pose as well, but it's one in which your body is having to fight the weight of itself plus gravity. So putting a lot of effort to rise up is a good idea in my mind, because yes, while it's a flexibility oriented pose, you have a tremendous amount of weight against you. And so using your glutes, using your back muscles, using your hamstrings to activate this pose is a brilliant idea, in my opinion. And of course, there are a lot of other factors in full wheel, like the shoulders and everything. And so if pushing yourself into the pose doesn't feel good in your spine or in your shoulders or wherever else, then of course we'd have to look at those individual parts of the body so that we can help it move as a unit. But just generally speaking, if gravity is against you, then putting a lot of more effort into it is probably a good idea. General rules of thumb. And if gravity is pushing you further into the posture, then work against gravity to try to pull yourself out of it. Is this a clear distinction?
Super clear. And I just even think that wheel pose is a strength pose. Mm-hmm. Like a back bend is really, if you're doing it from the ground and you're lifting up against gravity, that's in my eyes, yes, you are building additional range of motion, but you're doing that very actively and through strength.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I look at the front body, that in my opinion, in a back bend, your abdomen should be lengthening. It should be stretching your pectoralis muscles, your front intercostals, your front hip flexors. All of those things are in a lengthened position if you are in a full wheel. So it is a stretch, but from the back body perspective, it's all strength. But the fact that the weight of your body and gravity is moving downward makes it, it should be a big strengthener for you.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, and of course, the shoulders as well, depending on which side we're looking at, one side's going to be stretching, the other side's going to be strengthening. So whereas Hanumanasana, if you do nothing, you can be in the shape without muscle engagement. Right? Full wheel, if you do nothing, you cannot be in the shape. Right? So
you're lying down. You're just going to sit there.
Yeah. Same thing with Warrior Two. If you do nothing except put your feet in the position and just bend your knee, with the exception of the quadriceps, if you basically do nothing, you can kind of sit in the shape and it
especially
will exist.
If you have a sticky mat.
Yes, where your feet don't slide out.
Yogis love a sticky mat. And in fact, when I've had hypermobile students, I've told them, just get a really cheap yoga mat, which is a bit slippery, and let's see how your yoga practice changes.
Yeah.
Because then we're automatically doing what you're teaching us here. Like, you have to resist against gravity. Everything has to pull into midline. And it really helps to elevate that proximal stability, which is, the control and the stability on the joints closest to the spine.
Yeah, right. And actually, so in my vinyasa style immersions, so I have many different types of online immersions, but I have a couple every year. I do a vinyasa kind of thing where we do more movement and standard postures like those. And we put socks on most of the time, roll up the mat, put it out of the way. And we do sock practice. So because you learn so much, you get so much stronger from sock practice, putting your socks on, being on a slippery surface, you have to engage your muscles. And actually you just reminded me about like this idea. I always give the example of, imagine you're doing the posture on ice. You're like, there's no sticky mat. What would you do in order to maintain the shape? And I've always given that example, especially for something like Hanumanasana splits pose. And one time I was in New York City rushing to a yoga class to teach, And it was the middle of the winter, and I slipped on ice, landed in a Hanumanasana like shape, but caught myself before, like, my pelvis hit the ground. I squeezed my legs together. It wasn't intentful, meaning like I didn't deliberately try to stop myself. My body was just so used to going towards that shape and stopping myself, resisting full flexibility. Wow. So, and I kept myself safe as a result. And I remember like that moment, like I slip on the puddle or what was ice, and I contracted and I go, wow, that's why I did all this training. You know, like, oh, that, you know,
the nervous system moment kicking in.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Literally, yeah. When it's like so automatic and that mapping is so crystal clear and your brain just goes back to it. I guess that's brilliant advice. I mean, one of the issues that hypermobility, the hypermobile community is really faced with is this reduced proprioception, our inability of knowing where we are in space, that lack of sensory and motor mapping. And all of the ideas that you have shared with us have been so brilliant in terms of helping people improve that. Are there any myths that you still hear about, whether it's yoga or hypermobility specifically, or just random things which you're like, I'm not sure about that?
I'm sure there are. And in this very moment, I'd be drawing a blank. there are plenty of those kind of things, or things I just simply disagree with. but I think, you know, for me, the main picture, if you're on the perspective of trying to, you know, I guess what I really want to get across here with hypermobility is that there doesn't matter. Oh, hey, here's one of the myths. Okay, we're on to it. But like the fact that hyperextension in, say, the knee joint in triangle is going to cause injury or pain.
Yes.
Or
thank you for bringing this up.
Or even more, the hyperextension of the elbows in handstand. And there's a difference between these two postures in particular, and it's how gravity is upon the joint. Versus somebody that is not hypermobile, but is locked out in the joint. So you can be hypermobile, meaning you're, let's say, hyperextensive in your knee joint. And what that looks like to the general public eye is that the knee is bent backwards, right? And we come up with everything in sort of medical terms would be based on averages. So if we look at this idea of a straight line, we say, well, like most people look like this in their knee joint. And if anybody goes beyond this, we're going to call that hyperextension, right? So, and then somehow we equate that with pain, which I think is ridiculous, because some people in triangle pose with a hyperextensive knee will have pain. And some people in triangle pose with a non-hyperextensive knee, even a bent knee.
Yeah.
will also have pain. And for some reason, we've just said, well, anyone, it's because of your hyperextensive, that's the reason you have pain. So that to me is a myth, because there's a difference between how much, let's say, okay, so how many degrees your knee bends backwards? Let's go with this idea of hyperextension. You could be in triangle and your knee can be bent backwards in hyperextension, and you may not even be locking out your knee joint because you might have more space available. And I don't even necessarily know that locking the knee, I would never say that or do that necessarily, because I think it's just unnecessary force on a joint, but I don't necessarily know that that would cause an immediate pain problem. I'd venture to guess if you are doing that, there's probably a lot of other things in your nervous system that's probably causing pain, because you're probably just very reactive to things, right? Like I'm overly engaging so that I really lock out this knee joint. There's probably a bigger problem there than just your hypermobility. But in any case, most people don't get in a triangle and just like jam their knee as tightly straight as possible. If you are doing that, you probably can ask yourself why, and then maybe look at other options, because you could do the opposite. You could try to bend your knee actively without bending it. That would be an isometric engagement of your hamstrings. Might be really super beneficial, in my personal opinion. But anyway, there's nothing wrong with engaging the quadriceps in triangle pose, but you could be hyperextensive to the naked eye, to somebody looking out from the outside, and still be bent, meaning still have room, space in that joint. You could be to somebody visually bent the, you know, towards warrior two, that what's called knee flexion, and actually be locked out in your joint. And I would say the person who's locked out in the joint probably has more risk than the person who is not locked out in the joint. But we can't look at from the outside. Nobody can see this. I could not look at somebody's knee and say they are locked in their joint. It doesn't matter what the angle of their knee joint is. I could say they're more likely to be locked out if they're more towards straight than if they are in warrior two, where they're in flexion. We can say that, but it doesn't serve me or the person involved. So what I would have to ask the practitioner, like, what does it feel like inside their knee joint? Does it feel like it's as straight as it can be? Then if so, they are maybe locked out, but that doesn't necessarily have any correlation to hyperextension from what we say visually. Now, so does it cause injury? I don't necessarily know that it causes injury to have hyperextension in any sort of posture, to be hyperextensive. Those are your joints. Like,
you got to move. They got to move through a range. Yes. I suppose the best thing to do is just look at really muscles, because if you can see that a muscle has activation, it's going to be visible on not all bodies, but many. And you can also touch, you know, is that muscle working? And, you know, have a little bit of a palpation.
Yeah. So that goes to the next, you know, step is like, you know, what do you do as a yoga teacher in triangle pose? How do you help someone achieve maximum benefits from a posture? My perspective is get them to activate their muscles. I think it is beneficial to activate your quads, which would straighten the knee joint. But I also think it's really highly beneficial to activate your hamstrings, which 100%. Would bend the knee joint, right? My perspective is in the postures, I'm always trying to fight myself. I'm never trying to do the least amount of effort possible. I'm always trying to do the maximum amount of effort while, of course, you know, not trying to brute force beat myself into some sort of shape. The effort is in surrounding each joint with engagement. So I like this game of activating my hamstrings against my quadriceps, co-activating opposing muscle groups. That to me is one of the most fun things to do in a yoga posture, albeit really challenging to do. It's very hard to co-coordinate opposing sides of the body to engage. But when you start coordinating the nervous system with the muscular system in this way, it gives you a lot of benefits. And you have seen the most graceful movers, dancers, and artists in the world in the physical body, especially in like martial arts. If you ever see somebody do like really crazy moves, they're usually co-activating mm-hmm. muscle groups at the same time. And especially when you see a graceful movement, a dance, people think like, well, it's not graceful to just throw my arm out to the side, right? That, and just whack the arm. That doesn't look beautiful at all.
Whack the person next to you.
Yes. But to move it slowly as if I'm moving through like underneath water is the co-activation of triceps and biceps. If I'm just straightening my arm slowly, because if I just straighten my arm, it's just triceps. But if I do it slowly, it's biceps slowing down the triceps. So you see it all the time in dance. Maybe the dancer knows or doesn't know that they're doing this. I know my wife knows when she's co-activating, because when she's teaching, you know, my wife's a very magnificent dancer and she moves beautifully and gracefully. And usually people, when they try to emulate her, just activate muscles from one side of the body. And she tries to get them to activate more both sides so that the movement is more graceful and it's slow and controlled. And it's, but that usually requires a lot of effort, which then suddenly doesn't feel as emotive typically for people, because they're like, oh, now it's effortful. Well, that is what it takes to get to grace. You can't get to some graceful transition between postures and whatnot without effort and without the discipline, as you know, most dancers would have to put in growing up. They put tons of discipline in order to get to a place where it looks free and joyful and expressive, right? So same is true for yoga. You can't expect to, you know, be really graceful in your movements and whatnot unless you've put the effort in to train the body to do so, which takes discipline. And I know sometimes discipline takes the, you know, the fun and joy out of things at first, but especially if you're in the perspective of like, I'm hypermobile, or I've got injuries, or I've got, you know, whatever limitations, whatever your thing is, mm-hmm. we all have those things. There's going to be a period of time and a practice that you'll have to embrace of effort and discipline and getting through those challenges in order to make steps towards overcoming them so that you can have freedom and joy. And for me, you know, just kicking it back, like when I'm doing these asana where I have to put effort forth to co-activate opposing muscle groups, it has become joyful and fun. At first it was, not fun. It was hard. It wasn't, you know, it's the same for me when I'm learning a new song on guitar or whatever. At first, not, you know, the first moment it's fun. Then it's not fun because now I'm like, well, how do my fingers move? How do I do this? And then it's fun again, eventually, once I put the discipline in. Right. And I think you could probably find something for in your life, in everybody's life, where you can kind of relate to that, where it might be fun at first, and then it's effortful and annoying and challenging. And then it's fun again once you've kind of gone through the fire of it.
Oh, such good advice, especially for this hypermobile community, because we have bigger range and it's actually way more effort than for the average Joe to actually explore that range with effort. It's harder. And we haven't got the proprioceptive map to enable that activation. So to recruit your body at such a high level is exhausting. And so anyone out there who's doing it, just want to take my hat off to you real quick and just say, well done. And for anyone else who's kind of thinking, ah, dang, I got to do this. Hopefully this is the inspiration you needed to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It is tough. Like when I have to say this, when I practice, so much of my practice, especially with my left inner groin. So I told you I used to do splits all the time when I was younger. and coming back to yoga, I really wanted to get my splits back. And I just went a little too fast into it and then re-injured my left groin, which growing up, admittedly, I can remember as far back as fourth grade telling my dad I had pain in my inner groin. And he said, oh, you probably just pulled your groin, you know, from doing the splits. And I would always have that pain as a kid. And then it left when I was no longer, you know, I was in my sports phase and whatnot. And then it came back when I started doing yoga again. And every time I get into, say, center splits or straddles or whatever, I have to be hyper attentive to my hyper mobility in my left groin. And you know, a lot of people can just get in there and maybe just, you know, rest themselves into a splits and they'll probably be okay coming out because they have so much tension that they don't have to worry about it. So for those of you that have those kind of things that you have to, you know, be attentive to, it's actually a gift because it really forces your mind to become more focused. And that really is the point of yoga practice, is to become more focused, more attentive, more alert, more awake, right? And so if you've got something that is seemingly a pain in the butt that you've got to work, like, oh, now I have to pay attention. Well, that actually is the gift of yoga for you. It has been handed to you that you actually have to pay attention. Where someone else can check out, you have to be alert. So your mind is going to accelerate faster in the yoga practice than someone that can use the yoga practice as a way to go to sleep, you know? What I did want to just, I don't want to leave too many open-ended things. I did talk about the elbows and handstand. If you ever look at high-level acrobats and gymnasts, you'll always see that their elbows are hyperextensive. And every single acrobat that I have talked to with hyperextensive elbows, I've always asked them, do you have pain in the elbow? And I've never gotten a yes in someone that has hyperextensive elbows in handstand, specifically those high level acrobats. I used to train acrobatics at a certain point in my yoga life as well. So I met and have performed acrobatics. I've met plenty of acrobats in the world with hyperextensive elbows. And I always curious because especially in the beginning of my yoga teaching career, it was always like, no hyperextension, don't hyperextend. And everyone was hyperextending. I'm like, how come you're okay? Why are you okay? And I didn't quite understand it. So first of all, it should be first understood that gravitational force on the knee in triangle pose is upon you, meaning the gravity is going to increase your extension of the knee, whether you're hyperextensive or not. So gravity will help you to straighten your knee in triangle pose. Whereas when you're in handstand, gravity is always going to force your elbows to bend to bring your head towards the ground more. So you know that because if you don't push in a handstand, your head is on the ground, you're doing a headstand, right? So the force of gravity, I think, is, I guess, really an important conversation that we've really come to today as far as flexibility.
I think that's what I'm going to call this. This chat's going to be all about how to make gravity your friend.
Yeah, right, right. The force of gravity is an important thing to observe because in handstand, it's moving you downward. Well, it's always moving you downward, right? But it's always going to bend your elbows out to the sides. So you don't have the same force. And if you look at the elbows in handstand, to straighten them would move them inside. You would have to move them in towards each other. And gravity is downward, not horizontal. So there's no pressure of the elbows moving toward each other unless you activate your triceps. The only thing straightening your elbows is your own muscles, right? Versus in triangle pose, the force of gravity is also helping you to straighten your knee. And of course, the fact that your foot is on the ground. Yeah, your foot is on the ground, plus which if gravity was there, but the ground wasn't, then nothing would happen. You would be floating in space. But
and I guess the sticky mat is helping as well, right? You got the sticky mat you can lean into, you got gravity pushing down, and your knee can just kind of sink into a straight line without any muscle activation. And voila, you're still in the pose.
Exactly. And that comes back to our conversation of like, okay, well, in triangle pose, it's more passive because you can do the shape without effort and the shape will still exist. Whereas handstand, you can't do that posture without placing any sort of muscular effort. You would just be head on the ground. If you're lucky, you'd be in headstand. And if you're unlucky, you would just be falling over and rolling, right? So, or you just never assemble upward. So that's how we always look at the force of gravity and what it's doing to you. And then, you know, if you're opposing the force of gravity, that you can pretty much bet that that's going to be a strength oriented pose, even though there's flexibility always involved. Whereas if gravity is creating the shape for you and the yoga mat, the sticky mat, as you said, the ground in this case is pushing the foot up while gravity is pushing the knee down. That's something to look at. There's probably a higher risk of knee locking, let's say, than say elbows locking in a handstand. So I will still look at that, but I'm not going to say that just because your knee is hyperextended that you are somebody that's going to experience pain in triangle pose. Absolutely. I would never even ask
that language needs to go. Like really in general with most things, I think that language around if you do X, you are going to experience Y, because when we learn about pain neuroscience, you just realize there's way too many variables, and 99% of the time the tissues are the last variable really that are contributing, unless there's something acute like a trauma where maybe a car rides over your foot and then your foot starts to hurt. But really, for many times, like, you know, for example, a classic one is chaturanga. Oh, I went to yoga and my shoulder started to hurt, and people are like, it's the way you do chaturanga. Your body can move in infinite ways very well, and now we're suddenly starting to tease out how to do chaturanga with absolute fine-tooth comb. It's just not how the human body has evolved. We can do so much, but we've got this fear language that has been injected into the practice that if you do X, Y will happen. And it's just really not the case.
Yeah. And to be fair, it's really good marketing to say something like that, you know, to say, you know, I have a video, how to avoid shoulder impingement in downward facing dog, you know, like, which gets people really into what I have to offer. So that's a marketing tactic. And if you are able to see it for what it is, okay, cool, marketing. And this gets me intrigued. Great. As long as, you know, me as the teacher, what I have to offer is not just don't do anything, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. That always kills me. I hate when people are just sitting in the don't do anything. Well, okay, eventually we can't do anything. I think to what one of your messages that I hear you come getting across is like, we're a physical body with infinite capacity. Let's be open to what we can do, you know. 100%. And I think as long as you're doing things with that perspective, yes, of course, there are obviously injurious things in life, you know, like there's things that
like
are
crossing
high
the
risk.
Road or lifting a weight above your head in the gym. That's very dangerous. Don't you be doing that.
Yes, for sure. Right. Yes. Don't put weights on. That's ridiculous. That's going to, yeah. Well, I think somebody always says something. Well, you know, there was that article back in, I think it was like 2013 about how yoga wrecks your body or something. And
it kills me.
And my response was, so does not doing yoga. I mean,
sitting on the sofa.
Yeah.
Can
you sit on the couch?
Red flag. Yeah. Red flag sitting on the sofa, watching Netflix. And again, I just wish more people learned about pain and actually how pain works.
The thing is,
it opens your brain up to, it's frustrating at first because there's so many variables, but then you're like, oh, I'm so empowered because now I'm actually viewing the body through a holistic lens.
Yes. And you know, for me, yoga is dangerous and not doing yoga is dangerous. Living life is dangerous. Okay. It's always a risk. It's just depending on, you know, what risks do you want to take for in your life, you know, and that's up to everyone to decide. I think it would be also a myth to say that yoga is only healing. That's just ridiculous.
Totally.
But yoga is a practice that has risk just like anything else. And you will likely get injured from practicing. I would venture to guess almost every single yoga practitioner has gotten an injury from practicing. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it necessarily. Mm-hmm. It just means that you should be attentive to why you got that injury then and what you could do maybe to get yourself out of it. Right. And perhaps that injury becomes your,
teacher.
Your teacher, exactly.
And your guru, as opposed
exactly.
to someone in a white robe,
right,
telling you what to do.
But the perspective here is that, you know, the yoga practice can do so much more good than it can, you know, do harm if you're attentive to everything, basically attentive to your physical body, attentive to your mind. Obviously, there are risks along the way. You're going to get injured. Those injuries are going to, you know, set you back. Seemingly in your mind at first, and then they'll propel you forward when you decide to make them your advantage. But like, you know, for me, everything I do has a risk. When I go play ice hockey, I injured my elbow. My arm doesn't quite straighten anymore. I don't know why, but I landed on it weird and now it doesn't straighten, but that's a risk I take for the amount of joy and fun it brings to my life.
Yes.
You know,
thank you so much for saying that. The amount of joy we get from living in these bodies and pushing them and actually doing quote unquote risky things. You know, I think we've become so afraid of our bodies that, I mean, I was on this anatomy blog for yoga, and this one woman put a picture of someone doing hands-free cobra and was like freaking out about how dangerous this is. And I was like, oh my God, like this is tummy time that we put babies in, which is super functional for their backline. Why are we afraid of this? And she was talking about compressing the back and the facet joints and the inflammation. And I was like, you've got it so wrong. Like this is healthy movement 101.
Yeah. And you can usually understand these things from your own body. A lot of times you have a right and left, right? And your right side, you know, you don't have that necessarily in a spine, but in let's say your arms and your legs, you have a right and a left, and you've got a right and left torso, and you're doing the same thing with both sides of the body, but one side gets injured. So you just by, you know, distilling it down as a science project. Well, I did chaturanga, my right shoulder got injured. Is it chaturanga that injures shoulders if your left side didn't get injured?
So many more variables.
Right?
Matt, I'm aware of our time. Is there anything like big, big, big you want to say before I start wrapping up? Because I want to be respectful of the fact that we've been going for ages.
No, I think we really got to a cool point here of just, you know, observing gravity, observing, you know, obviously that everything has risk, but also everything has reward, and that yoga is a practice of self-awareness and self-inquiry. And if serving that purpose and serving your overall growth and potential, then I think you're on the right track. You know, trying to utilize, just summing this whole conversation up, try to utilize anything that you consider a limitation, utilize it as your strength, your growth point, your awareness to build and develop yourself. I think then you're on the right track. If you're using things for excuses to not do and not develop yourself, then I think you're on the wrong track. Personal opinion, of course. So use your limitations to become your strengths.
I feel like you've already answered this next question. So if you just want to say ditto, that's totally cool. But a question I ask everybody at the end of this chat is, if you did have one message for the world and you could give this message to absolutely every single person, what would your message be?
Honestly, I don't think it has anything to do with physical body, but it's everything to do with just simply to be open to self-awareness. And that's to question and to consistently ask yourself, you know, I think the main thing of our ego inside is to find ways to justify why we are right. So I think the practice of observation includes inquiry, questioning. And the questioning is not necessarily, am I wrong or am I right? It just, is this as I see it? You know, is the question, is this as I see it or is it not? You know, maybe it's different. That opening up to perspective of maybe there's something I'm not seeing, I think is what allows for growth potential. So if there's a message, it's self-inquiry, swadhyaya as it goes in the yoga practice. Yeah.
It's so good. It is so inspiring talking to you. I always love watching your videos and just looking at how intelligent you are about breaking things down, making it accessible to people, giving options, creating true activation. It's such a joy to have met you and be a part of your community. So thank you for coming on Love at First Science. Where can people find out more about you?
Thanks, Celeste. I appreciate that. And also same to you. I'm very inspired by what you share. So you can find me theyogimat.com. There's two T's in my name, Matt. I'm sure Celeste will put it somewhere visually, or the Yogi Matt on Instagram. I have all ways of practicing with me online. I have 200-hour teacher trainings, 300-hour trainings, which will get you 500-hour certified. We have monthly immersions that are online. And then I do run a few in-person trainings and retreats per year. Follow me on the Yogi Mat or visit theyogimat.com and get on the newsletter.
And remember that Matt also has some really beautiful free gifts that are available from his website as well.
Tons.
It's called the Activation. There was one, but I think...
You would sign up for the technique pack, which would get you, which basically gets you weekly emails with tutorials. So we have, at this point, each week you would get 1 to 2 tutorials based on your yoga practice. Either it's revolving around how to access certain postures, or it will be about activating certain muscle groups, or it might be about injury management and things like that. We try to pick out as many topics that are interesting and intriguing and exciting. And it's different than what you would get on my Instagram channel. So the videos are completely separate, and it's really about what the community asked me for. And so it's a great, if you like yoga, if you geek out on the body, you enjoy this kind of discussion that we had here, it's probably it's free, and you might as well, you get signed up and it comes right to your doorstep and you can watch the videos and read the tutorials.
Yeah. And Matt is just the king of value, whether that's on his Instagram or whether it's on his newsletter. So guys, definitely check out Matt. Matt, thank you for being on Love at First Science.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you thought that any of the topics discussed today were helpful, please do share the show with your friends, family members, or your community via social media. Your support is what's going to help the podcast grow. So I want to thank you for your time and your attention, and I want to send you loads and loads of love at First Science.